think because of actually they had no membership there at all. We had, but somehow or the other, you know, as in the air, you know, there are air pockets, you know, the kind of the representative whom we had there, he suddenly left the organization, you know, and for a brief period, while I was not in the country, you know, the appointment was not made and that office got, you know, sort of closed, you see, and it just sort of got left off there. So that we really don't know, but we did have, once upon a time, an office in Gaul. We had an office in Demiaya, and then our office in Rakwana used to also, you know, sort of through the other road, you know, have its influence there. But somehow that area has been neglected by us for the last 2 or 3 years.
Where is the CWC strongest?
Well, CWC is strong in Galaha area. Fairly strong.
Markedly?
Not as they were before. Not as they were before. Then they are fairly strong in Pusalawa, in Udupusalawa, partly in Ragala. Their predominant position in Norelia has already changed. I mean, these are the areas in which they are. Whereas in the areas, you know, like Hattam, Pallakkal and all that, there has been a break amongst them also. Vellayan, you know, who was once upon a time his general secretary and also vice president, about 2 years ago, who walked away from him. That has...
Who is?
Tanaman, yes. That has affected them very badly.
And where has he gone?
He has started his own union.
Vellayan.
Yes.
What then is your position on this question of separate electoral registers?
Well, we are opposed to it.
But the SLSP government is for it? Or shall I say the Buddhist...
As far as I am aware, Mrs. Bandaranaike has not yet made any clear pronouncement. She though make many impressions. There is an impression that the SLP is for separate electorates. Now, I think she did make a statement when she was the Prime Minister in the Senate about this separate electorate, but thereafter she has not. Our view is that separate electorate is not good, and therefore they are now thinking of kind of, you know, estate constituencies where the Sinhalese and the Tamil workers both may be in the estate constituencies. We are not quite happy about that either.
Why are you opposed to separate electorates?
For several reasons, one of which is that it would prevent integration. Because election time is one time, you know, when there is a possibility for, you know, workers to work together and on the side of all the, you know, competing candidates. That is one. The second reason is that it would give a rise to communal trends in the election. The person who will talk more pro-Singala or pro-Tamil, you know. But if there is a common electorate, the Sinhalese voter might hope to get a few Tamil votes, and the Tamil candidate might hope to get a few Sinhalese votes. And therefore, you know, both of them would be considerate to the opinion of each other.
No, but don't you think that with separate electorates, the Sinhala chauvinist will win communalism because he's frightened that the Tamil vote will go to the right wing? Try to the SLSP chauvinist might do so.
On the contrary, you know, now say for example, last time in the general election, now William Fernando in Talwarkale, in Nurele constituency, who was, you know, urged, eating fire, and I think subsequently also he is eating fire as far as communal aspect is concerned. During the election he was absolutely sober. Absolutely sober, because we told him that, well, if you will start delivering the speeches that you delivered earlier, you know, nobody will vote for you.
What I can't understand about this electoral another point, if they have separate electorate, you have more members in parliament. At least, so I say the Indian estate worker will have more members.
You see, there are two aspects of that matter. One is that if common constituencies are found, designed to find certain representation, then as far as number is concerned, it will not be affected, because that number in any case will be returned. You see, that number will in any case be returned. Am I clear on that point? What I mean is that now, say for example, as separate electorates, they want to give, say, 5 seats or 6 seats.
Right.
Now, if under the common electorate, also it is designed as it was before, as it was in the 1947 election, that 6 seats, you know, should go.
But it won't be designed that way.
Now, the point is that, after all, when a delimitation commission is appointed, it will have to be designed that way.
But then, what will the single fellow chauvinist crowd, or not necessarily even the strong, say about the single in those elections?
Yes. The position, the solution that we are advocating is multiple seats.
Oh,
so that we are not saying, you know, that the single should go unrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yes, I see.
You see? Therefore, now, but coming back to this point, so if it is designed that way, so the number will remain the same. And another advantage will be that in constituencies outside that group of constituencies which are designed to find representation for plantation labor, the plantation labor being in the general constituencies will have their own impact.
But an interesting point arises. There is impression that the SLSP is opposed to separate electoral register.
Is opposed to, you mean?
Wants a separate electoral register. Certainly the Mahanayaka Theros, at the summer, they wanted it. Now, do they, in addition to demanding a separate electoral register, are they willing to allow multiple
constituencies?
And are they willing to allow the 1947 position of 6 or 7 seats for the plantation workers?
You see, that is what we are how shall I put it? That is what we are asking them to do.
Mm-hmm. But my impression is that they oppose both, you know what I mean? Rather oppose one and want separate. They won't...
But you see, the aspect that I am trying to put to them is this. That why are they under the impression that the plantation labor will vote for the UNP? After all, it's a working class state. My view is that it is UNP they should be frightened of it, and not the SLSP.
No, sorry, I think I phrased my question wrong there. The UNP doesn't want the separate electoral register, right? And neither do you.
No.
But are you sure that the UNP will allow the 47 position?
Whether they will allow as many seats?
Yes.
As many seats? May not. May not. May not. You see, the point is that our view is that, you know, there is the short-term advantage and the long-term advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, at present the position is funny because there is only 134,000 number as far as citizens go. And half of that could be the number that would have the right of vote. But this situation is not going to last long, because in 4 years' time or 5 years' time or 10 years' time, you know, this number is bound to become 500,000. And if the electorates are not separate, you see. Integration and impact, both will sort of simultaneously take place. Not only integration but also impact. This will simultaneously take place. Mm-hmm. Now, you see, if I can take you back to 1947.
Yes.
You will see that in 1947, in 1947, there was no cry either for federalism or for single only. And my view is that it was largely because the plantation vote exercised a little balance in the entire voting impact as far as the areas outside northern and eastern poles are concerned. Now, you see, the minority vote was composed of the plantation labor, the Muslim vote, and a small, you know, number of the
brothers
and the Jews and Tamils, you know, who lived in these areas. Now, the combined minority vote did make it necessary for a single East candidate not to talk too much of, you know, crossing other business. My view is the moment you took away the plantation vote from these places, what was left behind, I mean the Muslim vote and the Burgher vote and that little Tamil vote, you know, was so small that it could not have its impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And as a result, you find that the direct outcome of that was that in the 1956 election, you got this language problem, you know, coming up.
Why not in 52?
Because it had just begun. You know, things had not settled down, as it were. Things had not settled down.
Mm-hmm. How, I can say that. I think I take that point. How does it bear on federalism?
Now, you see, these two things are, you know, one acts on the other. Look, the moment, in fact, in 56, when I went to London after the ILO conference, some Ceylonese students, you know, met me, and then they sort of asked me, some Singhalese students, you know, who were left in town, but who were supporting the Singhalese policy. They asked me, they said, what is wrong with the single boundary? I said, there is nothing wrong. But I said, you must be clear on in your mind that one thing will lead to another thing. And that is that if you have single boundary, then I said, you will not be able to resist the demand for a federal constitution. Because that demand will keep on persisting. Whether in actual form it comes about or does not come about. You see, as far as constitutional thinking is concerned, but in psychology, in thinking, you know, language of administration, and you know, various kinds of problems, you know, will keep on cropping up. Now, the same thing, you know, the answer is the same, that the moment, you know, here the single only campaign, you know, starts, it has this reaction on the other side.
Yes. There are lots of questions with regard to 1956, but I'd like to come up to that chronologically. But just another point, you mentioned the support of the planters to the Thondamal group. In what way do they support them? Do they go so far as to help them financially?
Well, the in a certain form, yes. Which is in their collective agreement now, that, you know, collective agreement has got three parts, I think, A, B and C. Now, the C part refers to the check-off system. where this subscription is collected to the check roll. Right?
Straight away.
Yes. And given to them. So that is a big financial burden because, you know, we are all having financial difficulties. All the trade unions are having financial difficulties. Even CWC, with all the financial help it gets, you know, from the Anglo-American Trade Union International Organization, the ICFTU.
Anglo-American?
Trade Union International, that is the ICFTU is actually, you know, there are
all the countries
there, but you know, British and the American trade unions have a big say. Now, when I say Anglo-American trade union body, I mean the International Confederation, the so-called free trade union organizations. In spite of that, you know, they have financial difficulties. In the sense that their telephone was cut, you know, for several months and they could not pay the bills and, you know, things of that kind. So they are having financial difficulties. Now, the peculiar aspect of it is here, which I would like you to sort of take note of, is that this Part C, which refers to Chekhov's system, also has in it the other points. Mobility of labor, the union undertakes to help them with regard to shifting of labor from one state to the other. If there is surplus in one state, this is actually a job of a labor agency. I mean, trade union doesn't undertake such jobs. But CWC has undertaken that job in the collective agreement.
That's a sort of bargain, repayment for something else.
Yes, sir. And the essential point I will come to the end of it, that not only this, mobility of labor, selection of workers for repatriation under the Industrial Army Union, and three, which is much worse of all, that the trade union gives up the right of a strike and slow down, goes slow and all that. Now the Employers' Federation are willing to give this facility of Chekhov's system to other unions also, provided the whole C, you know, this is where the important point comes in, that the whole of C, which contains all these points, is accepted by the union that is wanting the Chekhov system. You see, you're asking whether they are helping them financially. Yes, they are. Because this is a big hill today, you know. No union is able to get its subscription fully, one is membership. Partly because the plantation labor does not get full number of days of work. They are, you know, the lowest paid workers in the country. I don't know whether you are aware that till this 10 cents scheme, for the last 12 years, you know, there was absolutely no increase of it. Therefore, subscription does not come regularly. No union gets it. I mean, we get it perhaps on an average, not even a month and a half subscription is paid by each member for the whole year, mind you. And the same problem exists there also. So this is really a big financial hill. And in return for this, they have bartered away the right of strike. They have agreed to do the labor agency job for them, for mobility of labor, for selecting workers. And outside the Part C, they have gone and agreed to 10 cents, which is also a part of the collective agreement, in order to obstruct the 25 cents on the register. Mm-hmm.
Minor digression. I have been speaking to various students in the campus, Sinhalese students, and with regard to conditions of estate workers, there is, I find, an ingrained belief in the Sinhalese students that the estate workers are much better off than the peasantry, which personally I don't believe.
It's not true. It might have been true, shall we say, 2 decades ago or 3 decades, but today it is not true. You see, I pointed out on the wages board that infantile mortality in the country is 47 per thousand. On the estate is 110. Mind you, as much as that. Now, in the country it is less than 47 because this 47 is when you calculate this 110 also. You know, So the whole country would be 47, which includes this 110 also. You see, if you take away this 110, then it will be not 47, it will be 45 or, or anything of that kind. Whereas on this, this is 110. My daughter, who was working in Kandy Hospital as a house officer, she's a doctor, she was telling me that, she said, any woman patient that came from an estate, either for maternity or for any other reason, you can be absolutely certain that she is suffering from lack of blood. She said, I mean, without even sort of going and having a look at it, you can be certain that that would be the first problem that she would have.
How would you explain this deterioration of conditions, and how was it that their position was better, say, in the 40s and 30s?
I don't say better than what it is now, but maybe better than the peasantry, because at that time the peasantry had no sort of regular, you know, state care, as it were. Today, you know, things have changed. Things have changed, I mean, must be admitted. Whereas these people, the plantation labor, have been left at what they were.
Yes, I see.
You see? So that I'm not saying that they were better off than they are now, but they were perhaps better than the peasants.
Nowadays, do they still have their little vegetable plots and things like that?
Yes, they do have, but you see, all the workers don't have the vegetable plots, no? All the workers don't have vegetable plots. Some of them have. I don't know whether you are aware that even the death rate on the plantations is about 15% higher.
From the point of view of the DWC, and its long-term objectives in combating to the CWC, don't you think that one answer is going to be the extent to which you can spread education among them?
Yes, but then you see, we are trying to do that through, when you say education, you mean the education of the trade union leadership, or are you referring to the...
No, even a broader education in literacy and reading ability.
You see, the difficulty is this. Difficulty is financial and cadre. It's a tremendous difficulty, because what happens is this, that the subscription gets eaten up in fighting the court cases, the labor tribunal cases, the administration. You know, there are, DWC has got today about 20 offices, you know, which have to be maintained all over. And then the labor tribunal cases come up.
You don't have any union members, or I shall say lawyers, who are union members?
Unfortunately, not in our organization. You see, the LSSP has that advantage. The Federal Party has that advantage. I think the Communist Party doesn't have that advantage. We also don't have that advantage. It's a very big difficulty, but then it is.
I wonder whether, like the peasantry of today, once the younger generation gets a bit of education, whether they tend to leave the plantations.
Well, the position is that today the there is already a trend, not so much because of lack of desire to work on the plantation, but because there is not enough work on the plantations. But the avenues are closed, because everywhere, you know, this question of employment of Silanese, you know, has been brought in. And the workers who are stateless, you know, get caught into it.
Well, I think I'll jump back now, and here to a kind of a digression. I know that around 1940-41, Caldicott, and even Jimson, were rather unpopular among the planters. And they seem to have been caught between two forces, in a sense. And anyway, it would seem to indicate that they were at least to some extent, somewhat liberal with regard to unionization.
You see, I'll tell you, it was this. You know, people who had absolutely free hand, sometimes tend to become blind to the new forces that develop. Now take for example, what could Jimson do if 1,000 workers on an estate went on strike? What could he do? The Commonwealth Secretary would be at his throat that production is suffering. So he would want conciliation because he knew that the times have changed. You see, what's a new situation? What could Jimson do? Now, I'll give you a little example. There was a strike, you know, in Talwarkar, down some big estate. And I went to meet Jimson. He had come down to Talwarkar, and I went to meet him. Jimson, you know, started big. This is a war. There are regulations which can create difficulties for you. After all, you must realize that defense regulations can operate against you. He started that. So I told him, I said, Mr. Jimson, have you finished? He said, yes. I said, I'm going. I got up. Now what could Jimson do? The strike was on. Jimson tried to drink. You see, which probably the plantist wanted to. I said, I'm going. If you think that you have the power to get me arrested, please do so, I said. You are at liberty to do so. He said, no, Mr. Aziz, you're getting angry. I said, what do you mean by I'm getting angry? I said, what would you do? I said, if I talk to you, you'd be like this. U.S. Commissioner of Labor, I said, must realize that this is not the way to behave. I said, you're not making it possible for me to talk to you. I came here, I said, to talk to you. But I'm not willing to give in to threats, I said, of whatever kind, I said, from whatever quarter they come. So therefore, I'm going, I said. He said, no, please sit down. And then, you know, ordered another cup of tea and sir, he said, well, all right, now, what do you think could be the basis of settlement? I said, well, that is a different matter. That is what I came to talk to you about.
You see the patch?
No. You see, Jimson was completely helpless. What could he do? You see, the times had changed. Those people, the top class planter felt that these people were weak. But what could Jimson have done? You see, there was, whatever it was, there was a legislature and there were 17 civil governments in the country. You see, and even if the ministry was not sympathetic to the Indian worker, you see, no minister could possibly get up and talk Tommy Rott, you know, in the legislature against a worker. Because he had to go to him for his vote. At that time, you know, population labor also had his vote. So that it was not because Jimson was wanting to be liberal, but the situation in which Jimson found himself
forced him to be so.
He had to be. I mean, otherwise he could not have brought about any industrial peace in the country. There would have been no industrial peace. You know, otherwise I'll tell you, these people went to such an extent, the European planting interest, that once on the wages board, we were discussing an increase of 25 cents. And there was a trend that this 25 cents might be given. You know what they did? They approached through their people the
food ministry in UK who sent a telegram to Korea to say that if this contemplated 25 cents is given, the food ministry will not pay you this extra cost because they were buying the whole tea. You see, they will not pay you this 25 cents extra cost, you know. And Korea got frightened. The telegram was sent to the wages board, you know, and as the wages board meeting began, I think at that time Christopher was presiding. Christopher, you know, read this. I'm not quite sure as to who, but I think it was Christopher. Christopher read this telegram.
Aloud
or? What?
Did he read it aloud or?
No, he read it, you know, for the benefit of the members of the wages board. Mm-hmm. The meeting had begun. You had to discuss this 25 cents. And as soon as he finished, I told Christopher, I said, sir, on a point of order, that is irregular. He said, why? I said, because this gentleman, I said, who calls himself the Secretary of State for Food, I said, in the United Kingdom, is not a member of this board. And why are you should bring his telegram here? This discussion is between the members of the board, I said. Therefore, I said that this telegram should not be read. And you know, to my very great surprise, S.F.S. Pereira, who you must have known, heard of him. You see, he was a very liberal type of man and he was representing employers on the board, you know, representing the Low Country. And you see, his general attitude had been that because the plantation wages are low, therefore the single-use worker is unable to go into the plantations to work. And you see, though he was an employer's representative, it was his interest, you know, to sort of have a little, you know, upward pushing up of wages. That was his intention. And therefore, he was also interested in this 25 cents increase being given. And he fully supported me. That it was irregular to read this telegram of the Secretary of State. He said, at this meeting, he said, what is the relevance of it? He actually went a step further. He said, these kinds of threats, he said, we are not willing to tolerate. Now see what I'm trying to tell you, is that a situation had developed where, what could Jinsen do? You see, situation had changed, you know, and the type of big stick, you know, which could have been used probably a decade earlier, was no longer sort of...
No, that's very interesting. Is it correct to say then that you, representing the labor, also felt that government officers were unpopular among the employers?
You see, not because their attitude was liberal, but because they had to manage things. And they knew that unless they made some concessions, you see, it was not possible for them to carry on, because they had to see to it that production goes on. You see, so that it was not because of their attitude of their desire to be liberal, but because of the inevitability of the situation. With people like Christophers, it was different. I mean, they sort of, you know, did feel that, well, it's a rotten state of affairs and things might change. But not people like Jimson. They were under pressure.
What is interesting is also the position of the Sinhalese ministers, Bandaranaike crowd, especially the sort of the Sinhala Mahasabha crowd. They might have been, as subsequently shown, they were opposed to the Indian voters having a vote of one block. But you get the British government on the one side, the planters on the also there, and so and the workers here, which is single ministers, were also in a equivocal position, weren't they, to some extent?
Now, what precisely do you mean? You mean
what was their attitude? Now they were not fully with the British government, but at the same time, they are fully with the Indian
worker.
Yes.
Indian worker.
Yes.
Yes. You see, my view is that people like Bandaranaike, you know, on account of their liberal education, did have some measure of sort of humaneness, you know. people like D.S. Sinha, who really represented a certain kind of, you know, class interest as such, and even their liberalism was not big enough. Now, take for example. Take for example the question of wage increases. You know, I had always found that whenever we took up this question of wage increase, DS never reacted sympathetically, but Banda did. And the biggest evidence of it is the Provident Fund scheme. The DS during his lifetime, in spite of having been advised by the ILO, the ILO officer had come to Spillane and given a very favorable report, did not bring it in spite of the fact that the ILO's officer had pointed out that the Provident Fund scheme will put at the disposal of the government hundreds of millions of rupees in course of time, which could be utilized, you know, for national development schemes. He was not interested in it. But by that time, one of his first acts as soon as he came into power was to bring in the Provident Fund scheme and make it applicable to the plantation worker also, on an equal basis, in spite of opposition, in spite of, arguments that he was trying to make all the plantation workers villains, you know, and perhaps as a concession to that, he dropped the word national, you know, it was national employees, Provident Fund, so he dropped the word national and said all I could make it employees Provident Fund.
What is the attitude of people like J.R. and Dudley to this? This question and others.
You see, at that time, I suppose whatever D.H. said went. And there was no opportunity subsequently to assess, you know, their attitude. Because by that time, you know, Dudley had left office and this man, our friend Sir John, had come in and, you know, things had changed. But it must be said that during the period, you know, when Dudley was completely out of politics, his attitude was liberal.
But only in the period he was out of politics.
That's right.
If you could come right back to the point of which we took off from around 44-45 when you became president, and I would like you to take it up to the parting of the veils, shall I say?
Yeah. Maybe leave it to the next session.
Shall we?
End of interview with A. Aziz, 23rd September 1967. 23rd September 1967, interview 1.